Now to the exploits of an eccentric Englishman and his postal adventures in the late 19th and early 20th centuries. His name was W. Reginald Bray. He was an enthusiastic stamp collector until he acquired a copy of the Post Office Guide, which detailed services, costs and regulations regarding what could be sent through the mail, a challenge he took up with gusto, putting it to the ultimate test by eventually posting himself, complete with a bicycle. W. Reginald Bray would have probably been forgotten in time if not for the efforts of a curious stamp collector in Britain called John Tingey. After purchasing a number of Bray's postcards, John researched his exploits and eventually came across his granddaughter, Zoe James, who now lives in Brisbane. The result is a beautiful little book called The Englishman Who Posted Himself. I spoke with John Tingey and Zoe James a little earlier.
Hello, Fran.
John, how on earth does one post oneself with bicycle?
Well, the regulations allowed for a person to be posted. In other words, you could go to a post office and demand to be conducted to an address of your choice. So that's what he did. He started off in 1900. He thought he'd do it again in 1903, this time with his bicycle. And he repeated the feat a number of times, especially during the 1930s.
But how did it actually work? Clearly he didn't insert himself and his bike into the post box.
No, he just went to a post office. And he would point out the regulation to the postmaster, who would look up the regulations and say, ah, yes, I think you are correct. And then he would instruct one of his express messenger boy to conduct Bray to whatever address he chose. Normally, it would be fairly local, probably just around the corner.
And the regulation was that letters, etc., could go through the post?
Well, the regulation was a person could be conducted. And he was apparently the first person to test the regulation.
Is it true, and perhaps this has gone down in family folklore, we might ask Zoe this, but he actually once used this to find a friend's address? He was lost in the fog?
Well, he claims he was lost in the fog in, I believe, Stoke Newington. This is what he quoted to a newspaper. Whether that is true or folklore, of course, unfortunately, has gone to the grave with him.
He also posted many other things besides himself and his dog. He posted an onion. He posted many kind of root vegetables, all sorts of things.
Correct.
And how did he do it? Did he actually write the address on the onion?
Well, I think he must have had a handy penknife because I think he carved the address into the vegetables and somehow found a way to affix the stamps to them and then entrusted the said vegetable to the post office. And normally, it got delivered safely.
The poor postie. What else did he post, John?
He posted all sorts of things. He posted a purse in which he'd hidden inside the purse the address and the stamps. He popped that into the letterbox and I suppose he hoped that the postman would open it up, maybe to find a penny or two, but actually found the address. And it was delivered. And then, as far as he was concerned, his most bizarre item was a rabbit skull. And in this case, he wrote the address along the nasal bone and stuck the stamps onto the back of the head of the skull. He sent it to a friend, and basically, on the label, he said, well, here's the rest of your Irish stew.
And you mentioned him carving addresses there. He did all sorts of things. He used collage, he used pictures, even poetry. Sometimes he'd write a little ditty on the envelope and the postie had to work out from somewhere within that poem was the address.
Well, he did sort of give the postman a little bit of help by underlining the key words. So he'd underline the name of the person and the address. But yes, the postman did have to work it out.
And how did English Post react?
I can only say inconsistently. Sometimes the items got through. Sometimes the items got through, but the post office decided to charge him almost what you call a fine, an excess charge of probably a penny. And sometimes they just didn't bother and sent it back to him because he always took the precaution of including his own address somewhere on the postcard to make sure he got his cards back. So he was testing the regulations. Were the regulations interpreted consistently? I would say probably not.
It's a great, he went to great lengths to test the capacity of the English postal services. Clearly he was having a lot of fun with this. There's photos in the book that show him having a lot of fun, holding his nose when he posted the onion, for instance.
Well, I think he had a fantastic sense of humour. You could call it a dry sense of humour, or I would say a very English sense of humour. He did enjoy teasing the post office, and that comes over very clearly in what he wrote and what he looked like in the pictures that were taken of him.
John, how did you come across W. Reginald Bray and his exploits?
It all goes back to 2001 when I bought a small auction lot in a local stamp auction, just of a few curious postcards. Now, I still don't know why I bought them. They were just different. And in fact, I didn't really look at them properly for a few years. And then I'd actually realised they were all basically the output of the same person, a chap called W.R. Bray. I knew nothing more about him. I decided to find out as much as I could, and of course, what does one do? One goes to the internet, and I put in all the variations of his name and came up with nothing until I came across a website, and on that website was a small amount of information. Little Acorns, Mighty Oaks. Zoe, God bless her, she found this other website, and by hook or by crook, we got in contact, and she was fantastic, and she provided me all sorts of information and scans of images of her own cards, which I must admit are amongst the most fantastic autographs amongst the Bray collection.
Let's go to Zoe now. Zoe, you were just an infant when your grandfather died, but was Reginald a bit of a family legend?
Oh, definitely, yes. I mean, as we were growing up, he was always laughed about as the man who posted himself. And we also had a vast collection of him on the cigarette cards, which we distributed amongst our school friends. I've only got one that's signed, which is actually in the book, of course.
Tell us about the autograph collection that John was just discussing there, because not only did Reg try and post everything and anything to test the postal services, he also used the post to collect autographs. Tell us about that.
He had a huge autograph collection and was actually known as the Autograph King. When he died, of course, at the age of 60, and my grandmother was living with us for a few years towards the end of her life, and we had the whole collection in our loft at the home in Surrey. When she died, my mother had been pestered for years by another big collector to sell the autographs, and so she sold the whole collection, apart from about 200, which she kept back. A lot of them we didn't find until she died, but she had given me quite a few, including Anna Pavlova's, as I was a great ballet lover. There was Anton Dolin, Tamara Karsavina, Tumanova, quite a lot of the well-known dancers of that time. Plus, there were a whole heap of the stars of stage, film and radio.
So besides ballerinas, who were some of the most famous signatures?
Well, the best one and the most famous one is W.G. Grace, who I think everybody would know. So we've got Laurence Olivier, Charlie Chaplin, Maurice Chevalier, Suzanne Lanlon, Sonia Heaney, and then stacks of the radio stars of B.B. Daniels.
He must have been at it non-stop. I also read that he got the Pope's signature and he even tried for Hitler. So he would send out a card and ask people to autograph it.
Yes.
And send it back, return mail. Is that right?
That's right. He didn't ever approach anyone personally. He always did it by mail, sent a postcard that he had printed and asked them to return it on their signature on the reverse side. So, yes, he must have been terribly busy.
And John, just finally, you've written this book now about W. Reginald Bray, but you're not the only collector who collects Reg. This is going to help fill in gaps in a lot of people's collections, isn't it?
Well, I suppose so, although I haven't come across too many other collectors, probably about half a dozen. Maybe the book will prize a few more out of the woodwork, as they say.
I bet it will. I bet you'll get all sorts of people knocking on your doors and sending you emails now, John and Zoe. Thank you very much for joining us on Breakfast.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
That's John Tingey, stamp collector and author, and Zoe James, W. Reginald Bray's granddaughter, who now lives in Brisbane. And The Englishman Who Posted Himself and Other Curious Objects is published by Princeton Architectural Press. I'm having trouble talking this morning, and it really is a really cute little book. It's 6:26 on Breakfast.